Philadelphia and Jubilee, August said when Hattie told him what she wanted to name their twins. You can't give them babies no crazy names like that. Hattie's mother, if she were still alive, would have agreed with August. She would have said Hattie had chosen vulgar names, low and showy, she would have called them. But she was gone, and Hattie wanted to give her babies names that weren't already chiseled on a headstone in the family plots in Georgia. So she gave them names of promise and of hope, reaching forward names, not looking back ones. The twins were born in June during Hattie and August's first summer as husband and wife. They had rented a house on Wayne Street. It was small, but it was in a good neighborhood and was, August said, just an in-the-meanwhile house. Until we buy a house of our own, Hattie said, till we sign on that dotted line, August agreed. At the end of June, robins beset the trees and roofs of Wayne Street. The neighborhood rang with birdsong. The twittering lulled the twins to sleep and put Hattie in such high spirits that she giggled all of the time. It rained every morning, but the afternoons were bright and the grass in Hattie and August's tiny square of lawn was green as the first day of the world. The ladies of the neighborhood did their baking early, and by noon the block smelled of the strawberry cakes they set on their windowsills to cool. The three of them, Hattie and her twins, dozed in the shade on the porch. The next summer, Philadelphia and Jubilee would be walking. They'd totter around the porch like sweet, bumbling old men. Hattie Shepherd looked down at her two babies in their Moses baskets. The twins were 7 months old. They breathed easier sitting upright, so she had them propped with small pillows. Only just now had they quieted. The night had been bad. Pneumonia could be cured, though not easily. Better that than mumps or influenza or pleurisy. Better pneumonia than cholera or scarlet fever. Hattie sat on the bathroom floor and leaned against the toilet with her legs stretched in front of her. The window was opaque with steam that condensed into droplets and ran down the panes and over the white wooden frames to pool in the dip in the tile behind the toilet. Hattie had been running the hot water for hours. August was half the night in the basement loading coal into the hot water heater. He had not wanted to leave Hattie and the babies to go to work. Well, but a day's work is a day's pay, and the coal bin was running low. Hattie reassured him. The babies will be all right now the night's passed. The doctor had come around the day before and advised the steam cure. He'd prescribed a small dosage of Ipecac and cautioned against backward country remedies like hot mustard poultices, though vapor rub was acceptable. He diluted the Ipecac with a clear, oily liquid, gave Hattie two small droppers, and showed her how to hold the baby's tongues down with her finger so the medicine would flow into their throats. August paid $3 for the visit and set to making mustard poultices the minute the doctor was out the door. Pneumonia. Somewhere in the neighborhood, a siren wailed so keenly it could have been in front of the house. Hattie struggled up from her place on the floor to wipe a circle in the fogged bathroom window. Nothing but white row houses across the street, crammed together like teeth, and gray patches of ice on the sidewalk, and the saplings nearly dead in the frozen squares of dirt allotted to them. Here and there, a light shone in an upstairs window. Some of the neighborhood men worked the docks like August. Some delivered milk or had postal routes. There were school teachers, too, and a slew of others about whom Hattie knew nothing. All over Philadelphia, the people rose in the crackling cold to stoke the furnaces in their basements. They were united in these hardships. A grainy dawn misted up from the bottom of the sky. Hattie closed her eyes and remembered the sunrises of her childhood. These visions were forever tugging at her. Her memories of Georgia grew more urgent and pressing with each day she lived in Philadelphia. Every morning of her girlhood, the work horn would sound in the bluing dawn over the fields and the houses and the black gum trees. From her bed, Hattie watched the field hands dragging down the road in front of her house. Always the laggards passed after the first horn. Pregnant women, the sick and lame, those too old for picking, those with babies strapped to their backs. The horn urged them forward like a lash. Solemn the road and solemn their faces. The breaking white fields waiting, the pickers spilling across those fields like locusts. Hattie's babies blinked at her weakly. She tickled each one under the chin. Soon it would be time to change the mustard poultices. Steam billowed from the hot water in the bathtub. She added another handful of eucalyptus. In Georgia, there was a eucalyptus tree in the wood across from Hattie's house, but the plant had been hard to come by in the Philadelphia winter.